Want me to call it to order again? All right. Let's call this meeting to order, and would you call the roll, please?
Yes. Committee Member Zuber?
Present.
Committee Member Kermode?
Here.
Committee Member Barbich?
Here.
Committee Member Houchin?
Here.
Committee Member Guerrero Salgado?
Present.
Do I have, thank you all for coming this evening and everyone else in the audience. Have you had a chance to review the minutes? And if so, is there a motion to approve the minutes of our May 9th meeting?
This is Laura. I move to approve the minutes.
Is there a second?
Karen Zuber, accept.
Second. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Is there anyone, any public comment at this time from the audience? Seeing none, let's move on to the Measure K preliminary recommended budget for fiscal year 2023-2024, and that would be Mr. Alsop. Will you be doing that, or Mr. Zervis?
Mr. Zervis is going to be doing it, but I did want to say a couple of things. I was not able to be at the first meeting. Yeah, apologize for that. First thing I wanted to do was just introduce myself, although I just did. Ryan Alsop, Chief Administrative Officer for the county, and I wanted to thank each and every one of you for being willing to serve as on this oversight committee. It's really important for our county's future, and so thank you. Thank you for your service and your willingness to do it. Wanted to just recognize we've got a slew of folks from the county. Primarily, I don't see anybody else not of the county, but I may be not seeing everybody correctly, but we want to thank our sheriff, our fire chief for being here, our district attorney, and some of her staff members, Stacy Kuwahara, Behavioral Health Recovery Services, Andy Sullivan, our library director, staff, and then over here, those of you who don't know, we have our chief human resources officer, Devin Brown, Elsa Martinez, who's our CFO, and then a slew of county budget staff, as well as some other folks that aren't budget. Amanda Ruiz, who handles a lot of things, homelessness, other things, and is helping staff the staffing the committee. This is a new endeavor for us. Obviously, we have our own budget process that we typically undertake every year, and part of that has started, but we get into the end of this month giving the board a preliminary recommended budget for next fiscal year, and we're working toward that goal. What's new is we're talking about a relatively small but important piece of that budget, that is the Measure K revenues, up front, ahead of time, in advance, and those things are public and so it's a new endeavor for us as a staff, and so we're wanting to make sure that we do this in the smoothest, most transparent, thoughtful way that we possibly can, working with all of you. Measure K was at least a year of work, a lot of thought put into it. We were out all over the county, as you probably know, talking about it. Hearing from residents, did polling. We went out and heard firsthand from folks at various community meetings. And so the recommendations that Mr. Zervis will walk you through tonight are a reflection not only of the community input that we received over that period of time, but reflective of our Board of Supervisors' priorities. A lot of operational decisions that have been made and have been sort of, decisions in progress over the last several years. We're looking forward to sharing all of those with you and having a discussion on them tonight with all of you, ultimately bringing them to the board after that discussion for their approval. So with that, we'll get right into it. I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Zervis.
All right. Thank you, and I do have a presentation I'm going to do a walk through. You've all received a copy of the preliminary recommended budget. The departments that have programs or projects that we're recommending funding in this budget are here represented. Some of them we'll be talking with you about the details of what that work's going to entail and what that will deliver, particularly in our unincorporated communities. So let me just go ahead and get started. We talked at our last meeting just about kind of roles and responsibilities for our budget process, the county, how we function, and with your board being a new entity this year in this process, and of how that fits in the mix. Just as a reminder of that, you know, the county administrative office and really the team behind me here interface with all our departments, and they are really tasked with helping to craft the individual department budgets and aggregate that into what turns out to be about a $3.5 billion countywide budget. And we have a lot of staff that do the hard work in making that happen. After that, and after the board adopts the budget, they're really the ones interfacing with the board to make sure that the budget is adhered to. So they work with departments in a number of different ways as the departments go through the year in operating and trying to help them make operational adjustments on the fiscal side so that we stay compliant with the enacted budget and help facilitate the departments to get that work done. That's one of the roles the CAO's office has. Your board is newly created, particularly with respect to the Measure K revenue, so just that $56 million annual revenue and how that gets received and spent. In particularly, that role is to one, make sure that we maintain compliance with the enacting ordinance, both in a budget aspect as well as actual expenditures. So right now we're meeting ahead of spending any money, but we'll be meeting, you know, later this year talking about how money was actually spent and what services were actually delivered using that money. And then you can provide advice to the CAO and Board of Supervisors through this venue as a board. And then finally, kind of big picture, the Board of Supervisors, obviously they have the authority to actually approve the budget. Whether that's the countywide budget or the Measure K portion, they are the body that approves a budget and they amend a budget. So during the year, a number of things happen and that need to adjustments to the budget. So they're the body that oversees budget adjustments as well. So that's kind of just the 10,000 foot level on our roles and responsibilities. As we enacted on getting Measure K into the public and crafted to reflect the priorities of the public, we did a number of surveys. I spoke with you about that a little bit at our last meeting, and I forwarded you a copy of these. I've included the slides that show the unincorporated survey results. So these are the unincorporated area residents. What they communicated to us in a statistically significant survey with respect to their needs and priorities. This is really what was one of the driving factors in the crafting of the Measure K ballot language and not just the title and summary, but the entire ordinance, ultimately what folks voted on to approve. That I say that because that really has driven the budget that you see before you today. So when we talk about these programs and projects that are included in the budget, it's I think helpful to understand that these are really community driven to address the community needs and priorities that we heard throughout the county directly when we were out meeting with folks, but also through survey results. And what we see here on the first page, these are ranked highest to lowest in extremely or very important. You see those numbers on the right hand side. Folks in the unincorporated area were primarily concerned with law enforcement, fire, 911 response, maintaining those vital services, not seeing degradation in those, preventing property theft and crime, recruiting and retaining sheriff's deputies, recruiting and retaining qualified firefighters. You know, all of those top in the 80 plus range are all very centered around law enforcement, fire, 911 response, the district attorney, public safety. When we get to you can see the about the 80% mark, we start to see some other priorities emerging, and that is attracting new industries and jobs. So that's economic development. Folks are concerned about that and wanting to see work done in that area. helping address mental health and addiction challenges. So we see that whether some of that relates directly with the homelessness situation that plagues a lot of our communities, but it's not exclusively that. It's dealing really with the mental health crisis that exists within our community. As these priorities continue to go down, we see retaining and attracting local businesses and jobs. So again, another question centered around economic development and business development, which is a priority here. And we see repairing roads, veteran services, cleaning up litter and trash in public areas, so illegal dumping, and some of those as well. And then at the top of this list, we see maintaining library programs for children and teens specifically at the 67% mark, revitalizing downtown run areas, code compliance, economic development, again, preventing cuts to library services, and we see some animal control, increasing animal control spay and neutering specifically, preserving library service hours and days, and then enforcing rundown buildings. So we see some trends emerging here. Top line, biggest needs communicated, public safety related, fire, 911 response. Beyond that, we've noticed economic development, right, library services, animal control services in this one as well. And so that was really what gave way to the title and summary for Measure K, which I've included on your screen, just as a reminder of what the public saw and what we believe is reflected in this budget that's being presented. And that is to maintain vital local services such as law enforcement, fire, medical, 911 response, crime prevention, recruiting, retaining firefighters, sheriff's deputies, attracting industries and jobs, addressing mental health and addiction challenges, and then for general government use, which allows us flexibility in order to meet the changing needs within the community as those needs shift over time. But this is really what gave way to the budget process and how we considered how to invest this first year's allocation of Measure K funding. So we distilled that down into really eight different priorities. And these are not listed necessarily in a hierarchy. These are all top line Measure K investments or needs based on what we saw from the community data and what we heard from the community and how it aligns with the Board of Supervisors priorities that have been communicated to us directly or through our strategic planning efforts and our five-year strategic plan, which I provided to your committee as well. And we think all of these things match really well together. So you could see it's the 911 response, fire, and law enforcement is number one, maintaining medical emergency response, preventing thefts and property crimes, recruiting and retaining qualified sheriff's deputies and firefighters, improving sheriff, fire, 911 response, attracting jobs and industries, helping address mental health and addiction challenges, and then preserving library services. So what you'll see in each of our individual projects are tied back to a specific priority here so that we can point one or more, I should say, specific priority, so that there's a clear linkage between what the department is going to be delivering over this next year with this project, and a clear relationship to a community priority as reflected here. What you're also going to see, if you haven't seen it already in the budget document, is a number of key performance indicators. Right, so we want to be able to track and report regularly on all of these specific projects. With quantifiable metrics on how they're achieving the goals that were outlined. And so every one of these has multiple, what I call key performance indicators, quantitative analysis so that we can track and report, which we'll be doing on a regular basis on our website to your board and to the public. So the budget document And we're going to walk through these items this evening. I've prepared just a few summaries that we'll go over at a really high level. And then we're going to talk about each specific program and what those are intended to do. And you'll have an opportunity to hear from some of the department heads that are going to be responsible for delivering those programs. And then, of course, we're open to questions from your committee really at any time, especially as we get into the specific projects. But feel free, if you've got a question, to stop me, and we can stop and get the answer for you before we move forward. We'll also take a pause at the end and make sure that we've answered any of the questions that you may have or that the public may have. So from a revenue standpoint, Measure K went into effect April 1st, and we got our first remittance of Measure K money. It was about $1,300, so we were excited. I know it doesn't sound like a lot.
Don't spend it all in one place.
I asked our CFO to frame it, you know, like you frame the first dollar bill from your business, just because it's, you know, it's the beginning of what we think is going to be a catalyst to being able to really make an improvement in our unincorporated areas and our ability to deliver services there. So we're excited. It did start April 1st. Look, typically it does get off to a slower start because businesses aren't always in compliance day one. It takes them sometimes to understand there was a change in tax rates and to do that. So what we have is an estimate for those first that first April to June period, which is actually before, so we didn't plan on spending any of that money this fiscal year because we knew there would be a startup period. So we have April to June, we're projecting about $13.5 million in receipts from Measure K. And then our full fiscal year for 23-24, about $56.2 million or $56.3 million. So in total, this next fiscal year, we'll have available, the estimate that we have is $69.8 million in available revenues from Measure K. This is a table that it is included in your budget document, but it is a project summary. So this includes all of the projects. And shows the priority number, the item, the community priority that we're addressing with these projects, and then a dollar amount. So we're allocating about $66.3 million with this budget. Of the $69.8 million that we had available. So there's a little bit of cushion there, and we'll be able to kind of adjust going forward. But you can see here, improving economic development is priority number 6, $529,000. We're going to talk about each one of these projects specifically in a few minutes, so I'm not going to go into detail on this table, but the intention of this table is to show you just an overall summary of the different programs that are being recommended in this budget and how they reflect back to those community priorities. From a departmental standpoint, excluding the public safety communications project, which is, I believe, about $18.5 million, and we'll talk about that one separately here in a minute. If you exclude that, and I exclude it because it doesn't directly tie to one department, it actually benefits all of our public safety departments, so I didn't have a good way to allocate that by department. So if we're just looking at, well, how does this budget invest Measure K dollars across the different county departments? 42% of it is allocated here to the fire department, 33% to the sheriff's department, 10% to the district attorney, 7% to libraries, behavioral health and recovery services, 4%, human resources, 2%, although the human resources allocation is really being spent for first responders, and we'll talk about that in a minute, so it's not just growth in human resources. And then the county administrative office has 2%, and that's to work on economic development as well as the administration cost to administer kind of the whole Measure K program. So that just gives you an idea of, well, where in total is this money going within the county world, within our county departments. It's important for us to understand what obligations we're proposing in this budget from an ongoing or one-time standpoint. We want to make sure that we don't overcommit ongoing resources, that we have flexibility in order to do things in future years to build on what we're doing in Measure K, and to be able to make some of these big community investments that would be one time in nature. So if you look at how this budget is allocated between ongoing and one-time costs, it's about 42.6% for one-time costs and 57.4% for ongoing costs. So pretty even distribution there between the two, a little heavier on ongoing, and you'll get to hear why in just a few minutes when we talk about the projects. Any questions on kind of the big picture before we talk about the individual proposals? Okay, individual projects. Economic development. So at the top right of this slide, you'll see the associated department. So this is in the County Administrative Office. This is to address economic development within Kern County. And this is to establish, this project establishes a economic development division within the County Administrative Office, actually funds two positions that are focused really exclusively on economic development, particularly in unincorporated or benefiting unincorporated Kern County. So these positions would be working with and in conjunction with the Better Bakersfield and Boundless Kern Regional Initiative, so B3K, if you're familiar with that effort, but also working with Kern Economic Development Corporation, but also interfacing with the private sector, working with developers, working with recruiters, actually going out and recruiting businesses to come into Kern County, and doing a lot of that work. Also, you know, my expectation is to have those folks looking internally at what we can do, what the needs are to help foster businesses grow that are already here, as well as in order to make us a better place for companies to come do business, whether that's evaluating our internal processes, you know, our inventory of different zoning of land or of infrastructure, all of these kinds of factors that are considerations when it comes to economic development, how we compare regionally and cost-wise to other areas. So this division, it would be created in order to focus on that. That's a gap right now that exists within our organization and has been kind of handled in a piecemeal fashion. We need a more focused approach in order to really do some heavy lifting in this area, particularly because of the transition away from the traditional oil and ag sectors, or really energy sector, I should say, here in Kern County, and how that's changing during these times. The total investment there is $529,444. And that's on a reoccurring basis. There's no one-time cost associated with that project. This is not really, the second one is not really much of a project. It's really the administration and oversight. and that is the cost for county staff to administer and oversee the allocation of these funds to manage the program. And that's not really just the CAO's office, but that is maybe county council. It may be all of the supporting roles that come into making sure that your board is equipped to do your work and that we're able to oversee and manage these funds appropriately. Expanding the regional public works or public safety communication network. This particular project will actually be coming the larger project. This is a piece of a larger project. So, and it's a big project. This, our communication system, the emergency communication system in Kern County is old. It's over 20 years old. The technology is old. It's reached end of life in a lot of areas. In some cases, we're replacing parts with having to go on eBay and secondhand places in order to get the right parts to make these things work. It's not just a problem for us. It's a problem for Bakersfield also. Several years ago, we embarked, before COVID, on an RFP to identify a new replacement regional communication system for public safety that is interoperable, that works, you know, with the latest technology, that we can work in conjunction not just with Bakersfield, but can be a platform for other first responding agencies to become a part of, as well as give us interoperability with neighboring counties and state and federal first responders as well. This is a huge project. We're finally moving it along, and it will be going to the board probably in the next month. In total, it's about $177 million project. So it is a substantial project. Of that, there is a component here that I hesitate to say optional, because we don't want it to be optional. And it really can't be. There are five new sites that are in unincorporated areas that have lack of service right now, meaning that there's gaps in coverage that we need to improve and close those gaps in order for our first responders to be able to respond and deliver services appropriately in those areas. These are greenfield sites, so these are meaning that these are new sites that are built up specifically to address coverage areas in unincorporated Kern County. So I say all this because the allocation for this project is $13.5 million for this year, but it requires an investment of probably about $28 million over the next 4 years. So it's a large commitment, but that's a small piece of the overall project. Realize that that's why I gave you the estimated cost of the total projects to put it in perspective. These are specific to the areas of Rosamond, Cuyama, LeBec, Onyx, and Polonio Pass. This is a one-time capital allocation to help get this project funded, and particularly to provide coverage in these unincorporated areas surrounding those communities. The next item we've got is our Human Resources Division of the County Administrative Office. And this is a proposal or a budget proposal for the development of a team that is going to focus on recruitment and retention specifically for public safety divisions. And I'm going to ask our Human Resources Officer, Devin Brown, to come up and speak to your committee a little bit about what this entails and how it's targeted at improving our recruitment and retention for public safety divisions in Kern County.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Devin Brown. I'm the Chief Human Resources Officer for the county, and I manage the Human Resources Division of the County Administrative Office. As you heard tonight, one of the county's key strategic objectives in our strategic plan is to make Kern County among the safest communities in the Central Valley. And you also heard from Mr. Zervis that was one consideration that was a key result driving the passage of Measure K, which set up this committee and gave us this tax measure. But in order to achieve that and success and deliver for our unincorporated residents of the county on this objective, we must be fully staffed in our public safety departments. And you've heard tonight that's a pretty significant objective of all the residents here in the county and what we're looking at achieving through this budget tonight. So right now we have about 670 or so vacancies in our public safety departments. It's a public safety recruitment and retention crisis in our county and has been for a number of years now. And we are working very hard to address it up and down our organization and in our office for sure. And we're very focused on achieving that objective of becoming fully staffed in those departments. But we're dealing with circumstances that are sometimes out of our control. We have a candidate pool that's shrinking and shrinking in our public safety field, career fields. It's a hyper-competitive environment, meaning all of our public safety agencies up and down the state, throughout the country, are all competing for that same talent pool that's reduced every year. And so it's becoming more competitive. So we need to think out of the box to come up with a new way of approaching that situation. And so as part of this budget, we are proposing to add a public safety recruitment and retention team to our Human Resources Division. It includes six personnel who are going to be focused specifically on our four main public safety departments, our sheriff's office, our fire department, our probation department, and our district attorney's office. And those are the vacancies that I mentioned earlier in those departments. Right now, we have six recruiters in our team, and three of those are dedicated to other departments, our behavioral health, human services, and public health departments. So we have the other three are dedicated to the public safety departments and 20 other departments. And if you can imagine, that's not a way to go about achieving our objective. So that's why we're asking for additional staffing to focus really on those public safety departments so they're not having to share those resources. Right now, that's all kind of falling on one person's desk to try to recruit for those departments, and she's doing a great job, and we're trying to support her in every way we can, but we need additional resources. And the reason why we need additional resources is because we need a different approach. We need to go about this in a wholly different way. We need to be out in the community, really kind of building candidates from scratch is the way I would describe it. Right now, as I mentioned, our candidate pool is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. So we need to find people who are interested in these career fields and start young, start early, and build them as candidates through our organizations to help fill those positions and grow in those career fields in our county. And so we need to take a different approach. The proposal includes a manager who's going to oversee the team and also support in the recruiting aspect of the work. And it's going to be really kind of the key point of contact for those departments to help manage this effort. And it's going to be responsible for meeting all the measurements that you see in your packet tonight and making sure that we're achieving our objectives. It also includes two recruiters who are going to be really focused on candidate development, candidate outreach, sourcing of candidates, building pipelines for these positions. We don't do that in our county. We don't have the staff to do that. We are really ultimately a post and pray recruitment environment, which means we put the job announcements out there and hope for candidates to apply to them. We don't have the staff right now to be actively recruiting for these positions, and these two recruiters are going to be doing that, not just through outreach events like job fairs and in the colleges and schools that we're going to be looking for candidates for, but also online, really doing sourcing, cold calling of people, trying to find anybody that's interested in a career in law enforcement or public safety, and helping them along the way to apply for those positions and get hired. Candidate outreach, candidate development, we don't do a good enough job of shepherding them through the process. Applying for government positions can be kind of a mysterious thing for people who aren't familiar with it, like me and like our county employees. And so they need their hand held all the way through the process, filling out applications, making sure they have all the right documentation, understanding the process, communicating, keeping in touch with them so that we don't lose those candidates at any stage in that process. So those recruiters are going to be focused on that effort. The proposal also calls for two HR analysts. Really, these people are going to be focused on strategic HR planning, working with our department, public safety departments, to find new and better ways to retain our employees. You'll hear a couple of the other proposals tonight are related to compensation, and that's an important key measurement of our ability to retain employees. But we also need to find other ways to improve the work-life balance of our employees, especially in our public safety departments, and really work with our departments to deploy any and all strategies to fill those positions. So they'll be focused on that and taking in the analytics from that. So doing exit surveys of people that are leaving, really finding out why are we losing people? Because we are. And we need to be able to correct those areas where we can, even if they're not financial, and try to work with our departments to deploy strategies to do that and bring a true HR acumen to that effort. So that's what those folks will be doing. And then there's an additional support staff who will be managing the actual recruitment process, so like the testing process, getting people through that, you know, the civil service system, and developing and deploying also marketing materials for our recruitment campaigns. That's definitely going to be a part of this, is improving our forward-facing look to the community and to our candidates for all of these job opportunities. The proposal calls for an additional subscription, online subscription to a talent solution. So we've previously used LinkedIn Recruiter, which is an online tool to source candidates for positions. That's certainly an option, but there's other options like through Indeed and other job boards as well. So we'll be looking at those as possible tools to help this team succeed in their efforts. And then there's a one-time $50,000 cost associated with really, again, developing that branding and marketing of our recruitment events. You want to make sure that all of the candidates see Kern County in the best light possible. And so we want to make sure we don't miss out on that part of this effort. And so that's what that money will be spent doing, is developing that forward-facing effort. So we really do think that this is an opportunity to change our approach of how we recruit and retain our staff in all those departments. It certainly is going to help all of our other departments, because we're not going to be competing for resources, but it really will give our public safety departments an effort to really fill those positions quickly and keep their personnel in their departments, because every person that leaves the door is leaving with knowledge and experience, and we want to keep those folks here, providing our safety for our community and helping. Be happy to answer any questions, but I think that is my 5 minutes of my presentation. Thank you for your time. I'll be here later if you have any questions.
Thank you, Devin. So our next program here with in the Measure K budget is within the Sheriff's Department, and this is the addition of 10 community service technicians. So a community service technician, this was something new that the county started last year, or in June, about a year ago. The Board of Supervisors authorized 15 community service technicians with the, as Mr. Brown mentioned to you, recruiting and retaining qualified sheriff's deputies has been a huge challenge for us. It is our number one priority when it comes to Measure K. Before we had Measure K, one of the strategies that we had in order to get more sheriff's deputies on the street was to take off their plate some of the lower level work that could be done by a civilian. That's what a community service tech is. You see them around Bakersfield. Bakersfield PD has a similar position. They're in a little pickup truck. We have 15 of those in the county, and they've been very effectual in being able to free up our deputies to go out and handle those types of calls that are more urgent. Higher level of service needs to be taken care of and gets them to those situations faster. So we are constantly looking for ways to augment our public safety role and assist wherever we can in shifting some of those duties that don't require a sworn law enforcement professional to respond to, shifting those onto a civilian role that we can maybe have do a little better at trying to recruit. So we started last year with 15. That's been very successful. We now want to expand that program with 10 more community service technicians dedicated really to the Eastern Kern, the unincorporated area in the Eastern Kern specifically. So these folks, the objective of this proposal is to decrease response times to lower level calls and allow sheriff's deputies greater availability to respond to emergency calls for service and perform community-oriented policing. Realize that the sheriff's deputies, we only patrol in unincorporated areas. So these aren't technicians operating in incorporated cities. They're augmenting the sheriff's patrol deputies that operate in unincorporated Kern County. So this would add to that pool, specifically add 10 more units in order to help improve those areas with respect to response time and specifically for those non-emergency type responses. And I should add that I'm going to be speaking on the next couple proposals that involve the Sheriff's Department. The Sheriff and Undersheriff are here this evening and are available to answer any questions from your board. But I'm going to be presenting the next couple proposals because they really have to do more with labor relations and bargaining and trying to position ourselves to be able to hire and retain. And so so I'll be speaking to those, but we're here to answer questions. So the next item before you is the detentions deputy equity and retention item. This is really a critical strategic play that the Sheriff's Department and the County Administrative Office and the Board of Supervisors have undergone in order to free up patrol deputies to be able to be out on the streets doing more community-oriented policing and patrolling. So the detentions deputy vacancy rate was, at the time we were looking at this back in January, 23.7% for funded vacancies. It's meaning that we've got money set aside for these and we can't fill almost 24% of those positions. And in total, including unfunded positions, that was almost 38%, it was 37.7. So we had a tremendous amount of vacancies on the detention side. We still do. Those numbers have improved a little bit. I ran those numbers yesterday, and we were down at 22.5%, so it improved about a little over a point, and 35.4%. So we've seen some movement. I say that because the strategy here is that the detentions function within the Sheriff's Department is a mandated function, and they have to have a certain number of staff to inmate ratios. They legally have to perform functions within the detention setting. They don't have that same obligation when it comes to patrolling and responding to calls necessarily. So there is a legal function that they have to perform in detentions. If we don't have detentions deputies, patrol deputies have to be assigned to do those functions within detentions. And so the strategy here is to fill the detentions vacancies so we can then free up and put more of those sheriff's deputies that could be out on patrol and into the community. So to take over functions within the jails, for example, where detentions deputies would be performing those duties, or transportation. But the strategy is to deal with this very high level of vacancy rate within the detention setting in order to free up folks to go out on patrol and deal with community policing. That is attractive for a number of reasons, but one of which is timing. So those folks are already sworn law enforcement officers. They may need to go to field training before they can go out in the field. They may already have been field trained. But that's a faster move than trying to get a new recruit go through background and through an academy and field trained and then out on patrol. So the strategy is we think we can get more deputies out there sooner. This is one of the strategies, I should say, to do that is to alleviate the vacancy rate within the detentions department. This was a high priority, and the Board of Supervisors granted in January a 22% raise to detentions deputies. That was because our market analysis indicated we were 22% behind the average pay for that classification within our comp counties and organizations, I guess counties in this case. So We knew we were behind, needed to address that. The board invested in that strategy, knowing that that commitment, that ongoing commitment of $7.4 million would be funded with Measure K. So they did that January, as soon, really quickly after Measure K was approved, knowing Measure K was going to come. This is one case where the board has taken action kind of ahead of the normal budget process and Measure K process, because it's such a critical component in being able to achieve the top line problem of our recruitment retention issues in the Sheriff's Department, that there was a compelling reason to move quickly, and they did that. And so we are, as I mentioned, seeing a slight improvement in those numbers based on the numbers that I quoted to you. So 1-2% decrease in funded vacancies, but that's what this is intended to achieve. We also modified we have a recruitment bonus or recruitment sign-on bonus for new employees that was paid out over a couple years as different stages, a little bit at a time. And we modified that to front load it. So to say, hey, if you come on as a new detentions deputy, you're going to have this, you're going to pay 22% more, but if you're a new detentions deputy, we're going to give you this sign-on bonus up front as soon as you are qualified to be in the position, in order to try to deal with the recruitment problems that we were having within detentions. It takes a long time to hire detentions or sheriff's deputies, and to get through that process of backgrounds and the application process and the academy doesn't take quite as long for the detentions deputies as it does for a sheriff's deputy. But we are starting to see, it's still early, hope we're starting to see some improvement in those numbers. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing and tracking those numbers going forward, and that we can see some noticeable progress there with the goal in mind that this is going to help us actually get more deputies out on the streets, particularly in unincorporated parts of Kern County, really on those areas. I mean, that's the discretion of the sheriff on how he deploys his staff, obviously. But that's the strategy behind it, and we're fully supportive of that, along with other things like what you heard from Human Resources in trying to focus on recruitment for sheriff's deputies. And that really goes into our next item, which is public safety recruitment and retention. This is something that hasn't materialized yet, but we are in the planning phase to do this. It is an investment into salaries or compensation for sheriff's deputies to make sure that they are compensated appropriately to deal with the vacancy rates. So today, or when we ran these numbers, we had a 9.6% vacancy rate for funded vacancies and a 19.7% vacancy rate for total sheriff's deputies, meaning funded and unfunded positions. So 10% are funded and sitting vacant, almost 20% are funded or unfunded and sitting vacant. This is what we're trying to solve. And this is, as I said, one of our, or really the top priority that we've got in this budget to deal with for Measure K, is to deal with that vacancy rate. We are approaching this twofold. Now, this is a little tricky because we're getting ahead of ourselves. I'm talking with you about what we're trying to do here, but we're still, we haven't even started the process of sitting down at the bargaining table with the union, and the Board of Supervisors ultimately has to approve whatever agreement this is. So and we need to be in a position where we can negotiate the details of whatever that looks like between the board and the union, and getting that done to meet the objectives of the Sheriff's Department. So I can't tell you exactly what that's going to look like yet. I can tell you we're looking at two things right now, but we're open to a number. You know, we're looking at how do we make sure based on our market analysis, that we're competitive in the labor market for sheriff's deputies. That's number one. You saw the move that we had to do with detentions. We're not quite as far behind with sheriff's deputies as we were with detentions, but we are focused on making sure that we're competitive in that marketplace. We have to pay a competitive wage. The other component that we're looking at is some kind of longevity component. How do we make sure, how do we address the retention issues with maybe putting some things out there to help retain those more senior deputies that could stay on longer and help to build the wakes and mentor those ranks and deal with the retention issue. If we don't have as many leaving, then we don't have to worry about recruiting as many. So these things, recruitment and retention, really go hand in hand. We have run some initial numbers. So we are asking in this budget, we have put an allocation of 7.575 million for 23-24, with that going up to potentially 14.8 million by 25-26. Meaning we're looking at a multi-year strategy on addressing compensation, so not just addressing compensation this year. When we negotiate labor agreements, we try to do those for several years, 2, 3, 4 years increments. So looking at how do we build compensation within this period of time. So we have put those numbers together, and again, it's 7.5 million this year, building to 14.8 million if that were fully implemented. As I mentioned, none of this is fully baked because we have to work with the board and the labor unions to figure out what that is going to look like. But it's important that we have an allocation in this budget to deal with the compensation issues if we're going to make a serious impact within that recruitment, or that really ultimately the vacancy rate, which means, you know, deputies on the street and you know, functioning out in the unincorporated areas. Our next program to present to the committee this evening is the District Attorney's Justice for Kern Initiative. And I'm actually going to turn it over and ask your District Attorney, Cynthia Zimmer, to come share this program with you. I think it's an innovative way to increase public safety, particularly in our unincorporated areas, and to help support the Sheriff's Department in doing that as well. So, Ms. Zimmer.
Madam Chairperson and members of the Measure K Oversight Committee, I'm Cindy Zimmer, and I'm here to speak about our proposal, Justice for Kern. As I've been district attorney here for about 4.5 years, and I have two main priorities. One of them is to reduce violent crime throughout Kern County, and the other has been to make sure that our residents in rural Kern have equal access to justice. And I'll tell you, since we are such a large county, that is a struggle. But I was honored to be able to go out with the CAO's office and the sheriff and the fire chief last fall to all the townships, and the residents, and many residents came from all the different locations in unincorporated Kern, and listened to them about what they wanted. And what we heard was loud and clear. They wanted better response time in emergency situations, and they wanted the successful prosecution of quality of life crimes, thefts, things that affected normal people, shall we say, and I hate to use that phrase, but everyday people more often than, say, would the tragedy of a homicide. So with those two things in mind, we have prepared a proposal that we think can help in those two areas where the residents of unincorporated Kern wanted help. The first is for us to recruit and hire 8 district attorney investigators. And the reason I have this man who came up and is sitting behind me, this is our chief investigator, Jared Cadell. As you can see, he wears a uniform. not all the time, but sometimes. He is a sworn peace officer. We have a law enforcement agency within the district attorney's office called the Bureau of Investigation. In the Bureau, they are sworn peace officers. What do our peace officers do within the district attorney's office? They can do original investigations like any other peace officer, but usually an original investigation, that means when someone calls and they actually do the investigation, that deals with public integrity crime. Things where we investigate public officials, school board members, things like that, and they do those investigations. But we also, the majority of what we do is follow-up investigations where a peace officer is necessary. And we do that because the standard to arrest is probable cause. A peace officer can make an arrest on probable cause, but for me to have a successful prosecution in a court of law where a guilty verdict would be rendered is that I have to prove this beyond a reasonable doubt. So it's a much higher standard. So law enforcement, they do a very admirable job in making an arrest, and we oftentimes file those cases based on that, but we have to do follow-up investigation with peace officers in order to have successful prosecutions. It is difficult to do this in some of these far corners of Kern County. Since we lost our courthouse at Lake Isabella, it has been a major problem in getting those victims to trust us again and get them down. They have to come to Bakersfield to testify from Lake Isabella. That is difficult. We would like to have 8 investigators that can go to them, 2 sworn investigators in the 4 quadrants of Kern County, unincorporated Kern County, north, south, east, and west is the way we've categorized it. We think they can do amazing work in helping victims in a variety of ways. We think that we're not trying to compete with the Sheriff's Department in any type of recruitment or retention, because the Sheriff's Department does a very different role. They do very different things. They're in patrol cars. They answer emergencies, call for service. We do the follow-up work. If a child is victimized in a sexual assault, the Sheriff's Department will do the initial response. But if the child reveals more or there's something else going on in the case, is it our Bureau of Investigation that will do the follow-up? And they will do that in those different regions. We work out of Bakersfield, but we need to work out and have more of our investigators in the 4 quadrants of an incorporated Kern. We also would like to assist the Sheriff's Department and other agencies in arrest warrants. They are so busy with their emergency work. It has been difficult for them to arrest people or execute warrants and go out looking for people who have warrants for their arrests. We also do a lot of work for the Board of Supervisors. If they have a constituent issue, it is us they usually call. Not always, I'm sure they call the sheriff as well, but we also assist. We'd also like to have these investigators in these quadrants of Kern County make sure that they contact people who need access to services, like homeless shelters, and our Family Justice Center, one that we just opened in Lamont, that can help people with get legal services like restraining orders and different things. We want residents in rural Kern to know their DA investigator by name, in which they can call them when it's not a 911 call, and we think we can do it. We'd also like, in our proposal, to have 4 new special, we call them investigative aides or investigative specialists, 1 in each quadrant of Kern County. We need them. We serve 92,000 subpoenas a year. And in the past, we've had some relationships with some of the other agencies in serving subpoenas, but they're all so busy now that we need to get at least 1 investigative specialist in those 4 quadrants of Kern County to help serve subpoenas, get victims to court, help drive victims from Lake Isabella to Bakersfield to testify, because the judges decided to close their court. So these are people that we need out there helping with preventing crime, like our catalytic converter events. We've had many of those in rural Kern, and I think they've been very successful. We'd also like to have additional victim advocates. We have a victim department within our agency of victim advocates that help crime victims seek restitution. When someone's been murdered, it's our victim advocates that step in and help them get compensation or help in burial expenses. Our victim advocates help with the court process, help with transportation. When a killer is getting ready to be paroled from state prison, it's our victim advocates that help contact our victims and let them know this is about to happen and allow them and help them if they want to testify at parole hearings. We need two more. We need two more in rural North Kern and out in South Kern in the Lamont area. We need additional victim advocates in those positions. We have, luckily, one of four DA's offices in the state that has a crime lab. In other DA's offices, law enforcement has to send their request for analysis to the Department of Justice. But we are lucky enough to have our own lab, and that has helped us so much in the successful prosecution of cases. We do everything from drug driving analysis of blood alcohol analysis to DNA in murder cases. And so we do a lot, and we also have something. It is a crime scene response team that oftentimes goes out to rural Kern. 20 years ago, Mr. Haddad from Haddad Dodge donated two vans to us, to Ed Jagels, who was the DA then. And we've been using those vans for 20 years to go out, and we send criminalists, people with, you know, science degrees, to go out and help collect evidence in situations that are difficult with DNA and different things. We would like to make sure that we increase that, our response team, and also we're asking for a new van, that we could have something, a new van that we could go at that actually is built for this purpose. Mr. Haddad's vans have served us well, but we have really advanced since the time of 2002. So that's something that we are asking for, as well as criminalists, because really, with all the programs, juries, they expect DNA analysis. They expect fingerprint analysis, all these types of things. They expect comparison of firearms, and we owe that. We owe that to make sure that we can do the best job that we can so the right person is brought to justice. And justice through science and the addition of criminalists is very important for us. Two more things. One is we want to make sure that in the courts, we have five regional courts, and many of the unincorporated cases that originate in unincorporated Kern go to those courts. Shafter, Delano, Mojave, Ridgecrest, and Lamont. Those are our five regional courts. And we have prosecutors that are out in those regions handling cases from cities, but also unincorporated Kern. I do the best I can to hire people for those courts who live out there. And we've been pretty successful with that, but we don't have enough. And so sometimes when people are assigned to those courts, they do sacrifice a little bit in moving up in their careers through the office, because there's certain measures, that things that you have to do to be able to promote up and to become even competent to handle homicide cases. We're asking that those that work in regional courts want to go, and that they would be compensated a bonus pay for 2.5% for going out to those regional courts, and many of them have to drive an extra distance to get there. So I think that that is something that would help us get quality prosecutors in that area. I don't want any victim to ever have a prosecutor who doesn't really want to be there. I had the honor of being the Delano DA in 1989, and it was the best experience, I think, as a young prosecutor. But I wanted to be there, and I don't want people to begrudgingly represent victims in these areas. I want them to want to be there. And finally, paralegals. It is difficult. We don't have recruitment issues in the DA's office as far as investigators and victim advocates. We really don't. What we have are recruitment issues for lawyers, and that's complicated as to why. But paralegals, we don't have a problem in recruiting. And nowadays, with what we call the discovery requirements, what we have to do to get the evidence to the defense and make sure that they have everything that we have so we don't get in trouble, And with all the additional things like body cam video, how do you think that those, all these body cam videos that are great, we love them, they tell a story, but who gets that to the defense and weeds through hours and hours of body cam video? Well, the attorneys do it. The attorneys do it. Paralegals are imperative of helping us. And we're asking for 4 paralegal positions, 1 to go to each quadrant in Kern County. So we're seeking a lot of new positions. We think, in summary, that that could really help answer some of the issues, and we can do a better job in providing justice to the people that we care so much about in unincorporated Kern. So thank you very much for being so attentive and listening to our proposal, and thank you for serving in this oversight committee. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Simmers. We move on to the fire department. I'm going to ask the fire chief, Chief Duncan, to come down and address your committee. One of the things, if you were at one of our Measure K meetings when we went around the community, one of the things we talked about with the community was the backlog in equipment and facility needs within the Kern County Fire Department. It's extensive. There's a lot of very old buildings, old equipment. The chief is going to tell you all about that, but it is our goal to try to fund portions of that really every year. It takes a couple years to build a fire station, but it would be, you know, my hope to have a new station in development every 2 years, so that we're constantly working on replacing those, because many of them are outdated, really to the point you can't park modern equipment within them, and there are safety issues. So I'm going to turn it over to the chief to talk a little bit about the plans for station number 11 up in the Keene area, and then we'll address another fire proposal.
Okay. Good evening, Madam Chair and distinguished members of the committee. My name is Aaron Duncan. I am your fire chief. The item before you is similar to what Mr. Zervis just said, is the replacement of a fire station in the Keene area, moving it from the Keene area and relocating it to the Hart Flat area. The station at Hart, I'm sorry, in Keene, was constructed in 1950, so it is currently 73 years old. The fire engine that services that community does not fit in the, can't close the back door. So it's a safety issue. The grand jury put out a report last year looking at the totality of all our stations and identified this station as being the number one station that needs to be replaced just due to its age and it's not servicing the firefighters and the committee it serves. The Kern County Fire Department has 47 fire stations, and multiple stations are over 50 years old. Many are over 60, and we only have 3 or 4 that are over 70. So this is a first step in starting to replace our infrastructure. We've had a backlog of fire engine equipment needs, but we've done a really good job in the last couple of years through the CAO's office and the board support of chipping away at some of that. There's still needs, but this first project here of moving the station from Keene to Hart Flat is a great first step. We already own the land in Hart Flat. It's already kind of shovel ready per se, and we just need to go through design and we can get that going. Also, there's still value in the Keene land that we have. Kern County we're known for our wildland, that the fires that we have in the hillside, we have multiple crews. What I would like to do is retrofit that area in Keene and make that a wildland crew headquarters. It's a central location that services to Hatchby, it can serve Metro Bakersfield, and it's a quick jump off point to the lake area, which is our primary area. So it's gonna be like a dual purpose, win for the county with this project. So that concludes my comments on this.
All right, thank you, Chief. That is a cost of about $9.5 million. That's a one-time cost. But as I mentioned, you'll probably see similar items like this come on future budgets as we work to update our infrastructure from a fire standpoint. The next proposal is titled Safety Squads and Medical Units. It's also from Kern Fire. And this really aims to address the community need for a 911 paramedic response in our unincorporated areas, outlying areas specifically. So, Chief Duncan is going to present that to you. Thank you.
Okay, so in my business, response times mean everything. The faster we can get to a fire, the less damage we have. The faster we can get to a medical emergency, the better the patient has to save their life. For every minute that we're there to implement CPR on a patient, that is a 10% per minimum life safety. So if we can get there 3 minutes faster, that's a 30% better chance of saving someone's life. Currently in the Kern County Fire Department, we only have two stations that provide advanced life support paramedic services, and that's in Pine Mountain Club and in the Button Willow area. We have 47 stations. I think we can do a better job than that. Typically what happens when you have a paramedic arrive on scene through an ambulance company is they grab the patient, they leave to the hospital, then that area is uncovered again. What this project allows us to do is add what we call three safety squads and three medical units, and I'll tell you what they are. The safety squads are staffed with a small engine, looks kind of like our patrol, a little truck that would have one fire captain and one firefighter paramedic. And we would locate those throughout the county in strategic areas, and they would be dual purpose. They could serve on medical aids primarily so that the big fire engine doesn't have to go to that, or they could help out on structure fires or on vehicle accidents, wrecks. So since 2013, our call volume has gone up 57%. We have not added any safety personnel to handle that call volume. This would be a great first step. So, for example, if we have a structure fire in Rosemond, I'm pulling the engine out of the city of Tehachapi to help fight that fire in Rosemond. With these units, I would be able to keep engines in the cities they serve, the unincorporated areas they serve, so that we have a better coverage area of the county, which is a win. The second piece of this is medical units. This is something we're excited about, something we've never done, which is bringing on civilian EMTs and paramedics to augment our fire department staffing to assist us so that we can keep paramedics in the area that they serve so that they don't go to the hospitals. They're not in the transport business. They're just there to help pick up the call. So if I get a big fire in Delano and I take all the resources out of Oildale, I can shift these resources back into Oildale and we keep our response times down. That is a big win for our constituents. It is providing better medical care to the unincorporated areas of Kern County. I believe that's basically the gist of that project. So I'm here for any questions you may or may not have. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. And that's it's a pretty innovative program here in Kern. I don't think, Chief, has anything like this been done in Kern County before?
No.
That you're aware of?
Nothing's been done like this before. One success we do have with recruitment is that in our wildland crews that we talked about, we're able to train our wildland firefighters up, and we can bridge them over to becoming firefighters after they've done so much time. The goal with this program is to get more paramedics in the fire service. So they come on these medical units, they learn our culture, they learn our ways and how we do business. After a couple years, we can bridge them into being firefighters because they're already kind of trained to our standard. So this is a win in retention and recruitment as well.
The other need that this goes to address is really the delay in getting an ambulance. So I don't know that the last time folks have had to call an ambulance, particularly in the outlying areas, but depending on where those ambulances are and what calls they may be running, there can be a significant delay right now in getting that first responder support from an ambulance. Fire's there on scene first anyway. I mean, this delivers, you know, ALS, you know, paramedic service, higher level of care than what we can deliver right now, particularly, you know, when an ambulance can't get there or we get there first and you're waiting on an ambulance. It may be life-saving care that you're getting in those areas that you'd otherwise be waiting for an ambulance to show up. So,
correct.
The cost for this program builds over a couple years as we build it out. So initially, there is about $4.8 million of ongoing and $320,000 of one-time money. But that ongoing cost does grow to $8.4 million annually once it's fully implemented. So that's this is really a program we hope to be able to grow to improve that service level within the county.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Chief. The final fire item here is workforce retention. Very similarly to what we talked about with respect to dealing with pay equity, pay issues within the Sheriff's Department, their deputies. This is a similar item for fire. So this, again, you know, we're working through the bargaining process. We're working with the Board of Supervisors through that process and the union 1301. We've made some proposals. We're still going through that negotiating process on what gets authorized, but this item allocates about $5.3 million to specifically deal with pay, making sure that we're competitive in the pay market, both from a pay standpoint and from a longevity kind of retention aspect as well. So this is the offsetting item, fire. It's very similar to what we talked about with respect to the sheriff's detention or sheriff's patrol deputies or sheriff's deputies. So. And again, it is targeted to increase our applicants, reduce the attrition rate, deal with the recruitment retention issues, securing and maintaining qualified firefighters, first responders. The next item before you is actually from Behavioral Health and Recovery Services. This is the East Kern Mobile Evaluation Team, or MET. And I'm going to turn this over to Stacy Kuahara, our Director for Behavioral Health and Recovery Services. Stacy.
Good. Thank you. Good evening, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Stacy Kuahara, Director for Kern BHRS. The Kern BHRS Mobile Evaluation Team, or the MET team, started in 1999. It's been operating in Kern for almost 25 years. The MET team currently provides mobile crisis response in the community alongside law enforcement officers. That means MET's dispatched by law enforcement when somebody is having a mental health issue during a call for service. The team has expanded significantly since we started it in 99. We now have specialized programs that work with our partners in a variety of different ways. Our primary MET team responds with law enforcement, dispatched by law enforcement, made up of about 16 staff, and they're responding 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, taking between 170 and 322 calls per month. For the areas outside of Bakersfield, MET's ability to respond for calls for service, especially in Eastern Kern, is incredibly challenging. They cannot travel to the areas of Eastern Kern in time to be on site to respond to the crisis. We have tried to address that by utilizing what we call virtual MET. That means the officers carry a special iPad that is protected, encrypted and protected, so privacy issues are maintained for the client. We use these virtual MET iPads to try to meet the needs for Kern and rural communities. However, it's really not an ideal response. It does allow a MET interaction where there can be one, but it's less ideal than actually having somebody there to work on site with the person having a difficult time. The needs of our community are changing. We have increased needs for behavioral health response for MET throughout the county, specifically in East Kern. We also have a new federal mandate, 988, that requires that we build and use our mobile crisis response system to be dispatched without law enforcement, dispatched by the 988 crisis call line. The federal mandate includes response time requirements, and we would not currently meet that right now with the current staffing that I have that's dispatched from Bakersfield. So we're requesting the Measure K allocation and to build a discrete mobile evaluation team that will be serving in Eastern Kern. They'll be stationed in the Eastern Kern area. They'll serve the unincorporated and underserved areas. The team will be built to meet the federal requirements for 988, allowing the team to respond to the community without law enforcement. However, we will continue to partner with our law enforcement partners when we're able to provide ongoing mental health support for the calls of service when they are responding. This resource also has a significant impact in the local area hospitals in Eastern Kern because they're often receiving individuals struggling with mental health issues, and our mobile evaluation team works alongside them. This resource has been requested by the communities in Eastern Kern for quite some time. We have not until now been able to build out the team in this manner, and this would really allow a much needed service to serve those communities. So thank you very much for the consideration.
Stacy, would you mind speaking a little bit about how the MET teams interact with the homelessness issue in general?
So in Bakersfield, some of the specialized teams that we've built include co-response teams where a behavioral health worker works alongside a law enforcement partner. And we've built out a couple of discrete teams in that way to really target and also work with unhoused individuals on the street, especially those that are creating a nuisance, or when I have my other homeless outreach teams interacting with people. If we determine that they do meet criteria for a hold and they're unwilling, then we generally utilize those teams to help us with transportation and getting somebody where they need to be. So they've just been an enhancement in the outreach services that we're doing with homelessness. We do have homeless outreach teams working in our communities in East Kern, but we don't have this component of it. It's really enhanced what we're doing here in Bakersfield because of the complexity of need when we're responding in those situations. I anticipate East Kern MET will be able to work very flexibly within the community in that way also. When there aren't calls for service, it's important that they be out in the community and interacting with anybody who might need that level of outreach, and they're able to work flexibly in those ways.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah.
I think your committee, I mean, we all see the relationship between mental health, behavioral health, and homelessness, and also the interaction with law enforcement, you know, if and fire, and if they can support or go instead of law enforcement, that's a law enforcement individual that can be responding to something else if they're not needed for a mental health issue, or if they are, we're able to respond more appropriately with something like a co-response team. So all of these things work very closely together, whether it's behavioral health, sheriff, fire. And the final item for this evening is unincorporated libraries. So our unincorporated libraries, through a combination of budget reductions and COVID for a long time, were shut down or services rolled back. They've been all reopened, but reopened on a very limited basis. And I've provided a table that shows all of our unincorporated branches, the days that they are currently open, really mostly around two or three, the hours that they're currently open, and what this project is to open these libraries for 5 days a week, roughly 41 hours during the week, in order to be there and support the community in a number of ways that they do. There's a lot of our smaller townships around Kern County, all they have is a county library and a fire station. Some don't have the fire station, but the libraries kind of are our only presence in a lot of space, and it's the only thing that people interact with and get services from, and they value those, and they provide a number of different resources. And so our Andy Sullivan, our director of Kern County Libraries, is going to talk with you a little bit about what this effort is to kind of reopen all of our libraries to 5 days a week. Andy?
Good evening, Chair, Madam Chair, and board members. My name is Andy Sullivan. I am the director of Kern County Libraries. And let me give you a little background about public libraries in our county. So as you know, libraries are much more than books. We're highly trusted community institutions promoting informal and formal learning, equitable access to information, technology, tutoring, workforce development, and community engagement while promoting the social well-being of our residents. While libraries are highly trusted institutions firmly rooted in the communities that we serve, our budgets and relevance continue to be questioned, and libraries are often viewed as a luxury when measured against public safety and other priorities in what many perceive as a zero-sum game. There are many inequalities in our society, but perhaps the most unnecessary inequality surrounds education for all. Libraries are the great social equalizers that play an overwhelmingly positive role in public safety by focusing on the space, the places, and the systems that keep us safe, healthy, and hopeful in our community. We create intergenerational programs, we share resources, we make referrals to wraparound services, we engage with elected officials, community leaders, county leaders, and so much more. As a public educational asset, libraries are in the business of expanding mutual respect, democracy, liberty, and not fencing them in. The Measure K funding request centers around enhancing and broadening our library access for the unincorporated residents by providing access to more hours, to more staff, to reading materials, and a variety of programming. As you can see, I think it was on the other slide that Jim had up. we'll be expanding hours and days at 8 unincorporated library branches, and we'll be relaunching our bookmobile service and adding headquarters staff to carry out the Measure K effort. The combined 10 library Measure K proposals will add about 28 positions. Each branch will be open the 5 days, 41 hours a week, as Mr. Zervis mentioned, and will include evenings and Saturdays, which is what the residents have been asking for. Approximately 94 new titles will be added to the collection, and about 3,000 of those will be added to the bookmobile. So we're excited to bring back the bookmobile. It's been requested for years. Additional technology will be added, including computers, network, wireless printing, and self-checkout capability. And we'll have programming and vendor programming to all of our unincorporated branches. And we'll have dedicated marketing staff to help promote and inform the public about the new and expanded services. So that is the end of my proposal. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you, Ms. Sullivan. This is, and you know, so many of our library branches are in disadvantaged communities that don't have a lot of resources, and so this is really an effort to. I appreciate how she mentioned it was a great social equalizer, because being able to provide resources and services to probably the more disadvantaged folks within a disadvantaged community, and to promote education and opportunity is just part of the function of the libraries. And so that is really what this proposal is focused on.
I have a question. addressing the library for Button Willow, I noticed you have 6 days. And being on the Button Willow School, I know that we are supplementing 3 of the 5 days that the library is currently open. And my question to you is, having lived in Button Willow 56 years, I find it hard to believe that Button Willow will support that 6th day to the extent the cost of having that 6th day. What kind of background do you have in to support that? And this maybe sounds funny coming from the Button Willow resident, but I don't want to see any of the funds in Measure K be misused or misappropriated on a whim. I want to make sure that we have data to support that 6th day is going to be utilized.
The 6th day would be Saturday. The MOU with the Button Willow Union School District is for 4 hours that they pay for on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, the county on Thursday and Friday. So it would be the county days, and we would add that Saturday. It only goes through June 2024. And so after that, it would be 5 days, but we would make all the other unincorporated branches.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. It would expand the hours on those days, too, that the Button Willow Union School District are paying for. Right now, it's 2 to 4 because it only focuses on after-school activities, expanding those learning opportunities. So we'd open the morning hours. okay. and extend it into the evening. So it would be a little bit more expansive. They'd actually be open more than most libraries in the county.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I know that. And I just want to make sure that we're open and there's going to be attendance.
Absolutely. I understand.
Okay, our process going forward, that concludes the individual projects. So the process going forward, I thought we'd just give you an overview of what to expect here, and then we'll just open it up for any questions that the committee or the public may have. But from a budget process standpoint, obviously we're here today on the 6th with your board reviewing and advising on this preliminary budget. We will finalize the budget over the next week or so, and in order to go to the Board of Supervisors on June 27th. So this is our normal kind of budget cycle for the entire county budget. So we bring the whole budget on the 27th for a kind of first review, and then we're really back in July for public hearings. So we'll have a public hearing on the budget July 24th, which will be, again, the whole budget, inclusive of Measure K and all county funds. So for a public, for the public to review and comment on the 24th, the 25th, the Board of Supervisors receives public comment. I'm sorry, that should be 8/26. The board receives public comment, and this is where we update for all year-end balances and kind of final adjustments. We dial it in with the final assessment roll, because property tax is a main funder of the county. And then we ultimately, the board takes up adoption of the budget on August 29th. So just to give you a feeling for the process. And I say that because if the board hasn't adopted the budget, you know, our departments can't go out and spend the money yet. So you can say, well, it's for July 1. Yeah, but the budget actually hasn't been approved until August. So a lot of the work that you see done by counties that's based on a fiscal year budget actually doesn't start until late August, September at the earliest. So for Measure K specifically, from an operational standpoint, doesn't mean we're not going to be doing anything. So there are things that our folks are going to be doing as we move forward. So again, we finalized the Measure K budget and included in the countywide budget process. At that point, our departments will start coordinating and planning to implement their programs. So all of this takes some legwork and some time before we execute. So they'll be working and getting that planning done. The County Administrative Office and the Board of Supervisors, we will be working in the collective bargaining area. So like the fire proposal and the sheriff's deputy proposal that require a bargaining process with our unions, we'll be doing that work over the next couple months. And it can take that long in order to get things negotiated and set. So we will be working on that part of the process. The board will also be considering the public safety communication project. So I mentioned that would be coming soon. It's actually coming next week on the 13th. So they're going to be taking that up even ahead of the budget process with an understanding of the plan to finance that overall large system acquisition. So that's going to be happening in the meantime. The departments will launch Measure K budgets or Measure K projects after the budget is approved, and the board then considers approving any of the purchase agreements and contracts and agreements, so all the things to actually implement those things that require contracts that the board has to approve, labor agreements, those things that will be happening. And then the County Administrative Office, we will continue to work with departments to publish online actual program expenditures and performance outcome data. So all of the performance measures that you saw within this preliminary budget, our analysts here will be working with their respective departments, not only on the financial outcomes, but the operational outcomes that were shown here. And we'll be building that out online on a quarterly basis, if not more frequent, and we'll be distributing that publicly and to your committee. For your committee specifically, we're obviously meeting today to review the preliminary budget and advise on that. In January of 24, so in January, I would expect your committee to get back together for a mid-year review of Measure K, revenues, expenditures, and program outcomes. So we do a mid-year review with our Board of Supervisors for the countywide budget about that same time. I would anticipate getting together with your board to do the same thing on a narrower but deeper basis as we talk about all of the various programs and where we're tracking on actual revenues and expenditures at that mid-year point. Between May and June of next year, we would be meeting to review the preliminary Measure K budgets for 24-25, so the next year. Realize we haven't had any actual audited financials yet, so we don't come back until after that point when the auditor controller is done closing the books for 23-24 to actually review actual expenditures for and program outcomes. So hope that's not too confusing that I walked through that okay. So it's looked a little weird to me because we hadn't done any report on actuals, but it's because it's our first year, so we're just getting started in that cycle. We'll be doing kind of two budget reviews and then reporting actuals, although we'll have an interim, you know, preliminary review at mid-year in January to be able to check the status on all those items. And with that, that concludes my presentation. So I'm happy to answer any questions from your committee or the public, and we've got, as you know, a number of our department heads here that are willing to speak as well.
So you haven't audited the $1,300 yet?
Not yet.
Madam Chair, may I say something?
Please.
I just wanted to point out that, first off, Andy, do we keep, I know you keep, the staff at the libraries keep close track of the ingress, egress, or maybe you do at certain libraries, but not all. I was just wondering if you might give Ms. Houchin, doesn't have to be now, but give Ms. Houchin an appreciation for whatever statistics we've got operationally for Button Willow. She might appreciate hearing that as a, being associated with the school board out there and the school district. And do you have that information?
I just want to make sure I'm understanding. You're asking, let Ms. Houchin know about the different statistics that we keep track of the branches.
I think she might be interested in that. Speaking to her earlier,
sure.
It might be good. And specifically for Button Willow. Having an understanding of how that library is used and how often and how an expansion of hours might translate into the value added for folks out there.
I can let you know that when we added additional days to McFarland, that was open, I think, two days at the time, that we definitely saw an increase in circulation and foot traffic, just in community engagement in general. And of course, that's the hope for all of our libraries.
Yes.
I think it's wonderful that our unincorporated communities will be getting this benefit that not all of our branches will be getting. And I think it's a unique, I don't want to use the word experiment, but in a way it is an experiment to bring us back to a level that we were a decade plus ago in terms of our hours and in terms of our programming and support. Does that help answer any of your questions, or not at all?
No, I just want it to be. I just want the data to support the funding. That's it.
Yeah.
And on the screen now, those are the data that we use at all of our branches currently. I'm more than happy to have a conversation with you here or wherever about it.
Yeah, I did. My only
sure.
goal was just to. Give her a call, send an email, whatever.
Sure.
She may be interested in that. And, ma'am, I know in McFarland, just to Andy's point, we had there's been sort of a debate in the news about McFarland, and that library got opened, and I know we were averaging and probably still are between 2-250 a day.
Easily.
And out in McFarland. It's not just books, right? It's not just kids going in, checking out a book and reading. There are computers there. They get assistance with homework and whatnot. A lot of them are there because their parents are working. and they're there to get enrichment, be protected, be safe, and hopefully get some homework done, before they get home, so their parents don't have to deal with that. That's what I like most about the library out there and our libraries in general. But thanks, I didn't mean to have you. And then the only other thing I wanted to say, Madam Chairwoman, was just sitting here and listening. I think you have if you didn't already, a really good appreciation for just the enormity of the business that the county is in, the scope of services, and the complexity of it at times, with Mr. Zervis pointing out collective bargaining is kind of, part of all this, which hasn't been done, which will be done, but not certain about the outcome at all of that. In the context of some of the proposals that he had talked about, it's just a big, vast business, and there are many different aspects to it. And I think today you got a pretty good appreciation. The only other thing I'd like to say is that this is our first year with Measure K. Mr. Zervis talked about the collection a couple of months of the end of this fiscal year, and then a full collection of Measure K funds next fiscal year. Well, we hope Measure K funds grow with time. If we do a good job as a county on our economic diversification and other things, we will see that. And each and every year, we will have this board consider a set of proposals that are new. There's a lot of there's a lot of one-time funding in this. There's also some ongoing operational thing in this. There'll be new proposals each and every year. Can't do it all first year, but certainly we're hoping that your board agrees that this first year, it's aligned with priorities, aligned with what we heard, aligned with where the board's at in terms of trying to get some help to certain areas of the county to get them on a successful pathway. And so just a few thoughts from me. He did all the work, I didn't want to interrupt him, but final thoughts from me on that. Thank
you. I did want to just thank everybody for all the work that went into all these proposals. I know that there was a lot of diligence that went into researching it. I did have a couple of questions when we had a lot of conversation about recruitment. And I would say that that's the area for these underserved unincorporated areas that need to be really emphasized, that the recruitment includes these outlying areas. I can tell you there's no college in Lake Isabella. Saracoso's closed. And so if you're going to do recruitments out of colleges, there's not a lot of opportunity for you to find people up in that area. And if we're looking at economic opportunity and working with current economic development and B3K, how are they going to be engaging in these outlying areas? To me, it's just a major concern because unemployment, why it's high in Kern County, it's even higher in those areas. And so I just want to make sure that we're fully engaged in these outlying areas beyond just where we're going to be sending money, but how we're going to be including them in the conversation and recruitment.
No, I appreciate, thank you, I appreciate that. That's a good point. I mean, we've tried to really focus all of these proposals in the outlying areas. You didn't hear a lot about Rosedale, you didn't hear a lot about Oildale or, some of our unincorporated large pockets within Metro Bakersfield. I mean, we are focusing, not that they're excluded from some of the work the DA is going to be doing or others, but I hope what you heard tonight is that, we are focusing on delivering services in these outlying areas. I agree, we need to make sure they're included in the conversation. How we deal with recruitment in those areas will be important. I'm happy to talk with you more about that kind of offline, especially on the recruitment effort. I'd love to know more. I know you're very plugged in. You probably all are in your respective communities. And so I would love to hear more about, particularly in those outlying areas, how our human resources team can really focus in on those opportunities within those communities, because one of the things we struggle with is getting folks to live and serve within the communities that they're functioning in, right? So we want people from Lake Isabella or Boron or Rosamond that are going to live and work within those communities, whether they're in any one of our departments. if they're working at a library or if they're working at a sheriff's substation. So being able to recruit and connect within those specific communities, I agree, is critically important. Look forward to continuing to work with you on that.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to being able to provide feedback. I'm sure each one of us are on some of these recruitment ideas and how we can help support your work.
Thank you.
I would just add to, you know, it's a real trick to try and connect. Even with, there are populations within the Metro Bakersfield area that we, I think, have historically not done as good a job connecting with as we could be doing. And we are trying to rectify that and work through that. You know, the county provides some good employment opportunities. Being a firefighter here is a great job. Being a sheriff's deputy here is a great job. Not only, you know, you're being paid, it's good benefits, but it is a public facing, you know, critically important, really leadership position at any level in any of those departments. For people, and we need to make sure we're doing a good job of letting people know what the pathway is to getting there. And a lot of folks just don't. And so the trick is finding ways to meet them where they are, figure out, you know, where they're getting their information. And I'm drawing this all back to what Mr. Brown had presented, which is the need for this dedicated group of individuals so that we're not just posting and just sort of hoping, as I think that's what you said, posting and hoping, which is a good analogy.
Posting and praying.
You know, a group that is specifically, you know, trying to figure out strategies to connect. And sometimes that's as simple as finding people like yourself and others who are the connection, who can say, look, this is the way to do this. Here's the pipeline. This is the community I'm with. And here's this way to do it. And that's really going to be the job of this this particular group that we're proposing to be funded here. But we are looking forward to working with you and hearing about how we might get more engaged on that in Kern River Valley.
Yeah, if I could speak again, I would just think that some of the funding may need to go towards workforce development programs, as well as making sure that there's funding to do the outreach in those areas, because it's going to cost the county money to reach out to all of those unincorporated areas for these jobs. There's going to need to be job fairs, you know, in all the different locations. There's going to need to be public hearings. There's going to need to be visitation to the high schools and things like that to get the word out, because we don't have a college there. In Lake Isabella itself. So the workforce development component of it, I'm glad to see that, you know, that was part of the plan, but it is going to cost more, and I just want to make sure that we have sufficient money in the budget to make the unincorporated areas' voices heard and for them to be upskilled and reskilled in order to fulfill the requirements of the county's jobs.
Laura, do you have anything you want to say?
I had a comment on the, I know it's questions that I have, comment on the library. I am a board member for the Bakersfield City School District, and for a lot of our families, especially in Area 4, the libraries are their safe spot. That's where both parents can educate themselves on how to help their kids. It's also their stay cool place because of their living circumstances, and it's also their stay warm, please. So the library, you know, in the Lamont area, I think it would really benefit a lot of the families, because I know that a lot of the families from there also come into our Trexton and Baker locations. So thank you. I appreciate that. I just had to say that, and we'll see how it goes. Thank you. And on the retention and recruitment, just for the DA's office, sheriffs. In our district, we're struggling with our teacher retention, bus drivers. So we had to think outside the box. You know, we all had to put our heads together, superintendent, you know, staff, and we actually got feedback, and you know, from a survey on our current employees on our different departments, it's like, what do you guys see that we're not seeing, right? And I think that was the actual key. Where it was like, well, I know somebody wants to work, but what do I get out of it? But sometimes it's that little bonus, right? What do I get out of it? So we are doing a $1,000 for a teacher that refers a bus driver and the bus driver goes through. So $1,000, you know, for some teachers is a lot. For some, it's just, you know, a lot of teachers put money out of their pocket. So it's there. Eventually, it'll be with our CSEA employees, which is our classified employees, nutritional workers, and also our bus drivers. So that's a little incentive there. So maybe within the Sheriff's Department, I don't know if they already offer that. Hey, refer somebody, and you get a little kickback on it. That's, so far, it's been working for our district. I know it's not the same kind of organization, but every organization has this problem, the retention and the recruitment. How do you go about recruitment? Like, you know, like the areas that you're mentioning, there's no college out there. Well, it all starts in a school system. Currently, our district is working on a portrait of a graduate. How much information do we give our families and our students? Or when we're handing them over to the high school, are we just saying you're done with elementary and middle school? Because honest to God, college is not for everybody. And some of these kids leave and they're going into the current high school system in a homeless shelter as a foster child, you know? So how do you tell them that it's okay, because they don't know any better? When you ask them, because I've sat there and I've asked them, what do you think about college? Oh, that's like way too high for them, you know? That's something that they can never reach. But maybe all these organizations that are out here can get together with the school system, and that's where you start. You start educating on retention and recruitment and the, you know, what you're going to get out of it on the long run. So that's just what I'm hearing, you know. We're going through the same thing. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. And I agree with you. I think starting in the school system, especially in the areas that don't have colleges, is critical. And we have jobs at the county that don't require a college education, and they're good jobs. There's still employment opportunities out there. I mean, the fire chief reworked some of his criteria, and you can get on at a starting position in a fire, in the fire department, with a high school diploma. And you never have to go to college. So I agree with you. Not everyone is cut out for college. There are different trades out there, and we have a lot of employment opportunities at the county and our partner agencies. So I agree with that. As far as and your comment on the referral bonus is helpful too. That is something we're talking about. I don't believe it's something we do now, although it might be for different parts of the organization. But that is some, it's conversations we're having now. We do have sign-on bonuses for, I think, the district attorney, definitely in the sheriff's department, detentions, and they're fairly significant sign-on bonuses to try to induce people. But that referral is a different type of incentive, so I appreciate you bringing that up. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I hate to keep speaking, but I just think that sometimes, you know, coming from Lake Isabel, I've lived there for 40 years, and I don't even think our young students know even to look outside of Lake Isabella. A lot of them never even get out of the area. To them, they're looking at jobs at Burger King or Taco Bell or something like that. And so without some direct outreach into these outlying communities, we are going to watch poverty grow and increase. And so really, you know, even if it, I know it's an education system, but like CTEC, what they have down here in Bakersfield, there's nothing like that in Lake Isabella, nothing. And so a lot of the organizations, the children there are going to continue to fall further and further behind as drugs become more and more of a takeover and as squatters take over the houses in their neighborhood, so there's more and more access to drugs. It's a very different world outside of Bakersfield. very different. And I'm hoping that as we go through this process that we'll be able to bring more insight to the table about the problems in the communities so that they can be addressed. I know this is just the first year, but there's a lot of problems that need to be addressed. You know, I fully support the sheriff. I fully support the DA, but there's so many problems. I mean, we're still closing courts in the Eastern Kern. And so we're talking about filling this, but we're still talking about closing courthouses. And so to me, we have a deeper problem that needs to be addressed.
So. Thank you. Jeffrey?
Thank you. First, would like to thank everyone that presented tonight. Based upon my background, I think I could connect with everything that's being put into these proposals, whether it's waiting for a MET team to show up at 1 o'clock in the morning, or no deputies to show up at a commercial burglary, the recruitment side of things, been there. So I applaud each of you for bringing forward proposals that address those things. I think even more importantly, rather than just connecting with me, I think you're connecting with what I hear from my friends and my neighbors and the businesses, you know, that I support. And it's the feeling of a lack of engagement, a lack of presence, you know, in the mountain area. And so the use of, we called them community service officers, but the use of non-sworn personnel to get out there and make that face-to-face contact, the increased presence from the DA's office and follow up, the mental health services, recruitment, I fully support all of that. I think those are all good steps in the right direction. I do have two questions. One, it would appear, looking at the priorities, that if you went to the next priority that didn't make the list, it would likely be animal services and or code enforcement. And I do believe that animal services brought some proposals forward, and I understand the wording of the measure doesn't specifically call out animal services, but I know their budget's tight. On the news today, 45% increase in the inflow of dogs into the shelters, need for additional shelter space. So my question is, I know there's only so much money, and I certainly can't advocate taking money away from anything that we've heard tonight, but going forward into the next year, is there the opportunity to look beyond the list of 7 or 8 priorities that we currently have?
Okay. Yeah. Yes. The answer is yes. So we absolutely. I mean, this is where we're starting, and we're starting with what, you know, what we thought were what we heard were the top critical priorities, and public safety staffing being number one. But that's not where we end, right? So trust me, I would love more code enforcement. I'm a big proponent of code enforcement. I see it all over all of our communities. There are issues, animal control as well. There we will be looking at other priorities going forward. Absolutely. And I will say we've continued to invest as we have been able to. So there were a lot of proposals that came through, and some of them, you know, you saw before you today. Some of them have to wait. Some of them we accommodated within the rest of the county's $3 billion budget. So we've met several of them. With animal control, we are looking at where we can help support those needs, code enforcement specifically as well. Last year, we added 2 code enforcement officers to the team. The team had 6 on it before, so it's only 8. That's a big percentage increase. But that means they each get about 1,000 square miles to patrol, right? So, which is just inadequate to actually catch up on the things that are out there within our community. So we know we need to do more on the code enforcement side. There's needs on the animal control side. We have doubled our spay and neuter budget and supplemented that. As we've depleted it, we've continued to go back to the board and get supplemental budget requests in order to make sure that there's resources there. Doesn't mean there aren't needs. There are a lot of needs there. I will tell you, we are in the preliminary phases of siting a new and designing a new animal control facility with ample space and resources for them to be able to do a better job. The facility we're in, if you're familiar with it, is inadequate in my opinion, and we're trying to get to something that is adequate as quickly as possible, and that's coming. And that's not a Measure K project. That's just something we're working on. That's also coming forward. I think that's probably the time we look at their total resources and staffing and the rest of that as well. But at the same time, I know, our animal control services in East Kern are lacking as well. So we're trying to balance all those needs. There probably will be Measure K asks coming forward in the future. And we are definitely open to those changing priorities as we move forward. And quite frankly, I anticipate doing more polling, more survey work with the community. We didn't do one this year, but to do a follow-up in the future, next year or 2 years, to recalibrate, see where the community's at and how we're doing and what are their priorities, so that we make sure we're not just using data from 2022 to drive these decisions. We want to make sure that we're using all those, all the current data in order to drive our decision making.
Thank you for that. And my other question was, just given how volatile the economy is right now, interest rates and, who knows what's going to happen the next day, how confident is the county in their revenue projections?
I'm fairly confident in it. We have a consulting firm that helps do very detailed projections when it comes to sales tax, and they did assist with these projections as well. There's definitely a lot of economic uncertainty out there. We haven't seen that translate into sales tax numbers yet. So our sales tax in general has continued to be fairly strong in the county. It doesn't mean it's going to stay that way. But we monitor it on a regular basis, and we have a team at the county that engages on that regularly. If we see it fall, we'll know in Q1. Well, we'll know, our Q1, so how we're doing and how we're tracking, and we'll be able to adjust. And like I said, a lot of these projects aren't going to get started until September. So we'll have some data before we start spending money in order to be able to adjust. And if it's a significant change and we need to change plans, we'll be prepared to do that. And we'll be back in front of your board or your committee in January with that mid-year report, in order to give you a better view of what that's looking like.
Yeah. Thank you.
Regina?
Yes, I do want to thank all the people that did, all the participants. I do appreciate that. And I think let's use the library. We know now there are 8 open 5 days a week. So Sheriff and Chief, get your staff in there more than once a year and do your, advertising. That's what we're doing there. And if whoever attends those meetings and calls those meetings of the parents and older siblings, the passion that we felt tonight, that's what they need. They need that same passion when they're delivering those messages to our kids. So I do appreciate you. Thank you.
I just want to make a short comment. It looks like we need to schedule another meeting. But first of all, Mr. Alsop, Mr. Zervis, thank you very much. That's an excellent presentation, and particularly those of you from the different departments. Thank you for spending your evening with us, and those of you that made presentations, excellent also. So do we need to schedule another meeting now, or do you want to adjourn tonight?
So, you know, actually there's not a need for another meeting at this point. So I think our next meeting, unless something happens, the next meeting we'd be looking forward to is January of 24, and we'll keep your committee apprised.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thank you, committee. Thank you, everybody. We're adjourned.
Thank you.
Yeah.